This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is Hemant.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. If you like what you're listening to, go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. Actually, if you don't like what you're listening to, just go there anyway.
It's a fun site.
And leave us 5 stars on all the things on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're just going to get right into this.
Oh, no pleasantries?
No,
I'm doing
no.
Fine, thanks for asking.
Hi, bye. I'll get to them eventually.
Okay.
We'll start with this one because I think this is going to be quick.
Okay.
We've talked about this before, the Johnson Amendment, the thing that lets pastors tell you who to vote for in the pulpit. They can do that already, but the deal that we have is that if they want their tax exemption, like every
and
other nonprofit, then they can't tell you who to vote for. They can talk about issues like homosexuality, but they can't tell you vote for this candidate. And a lot of conservatives really want them to be able to do that and funnel money through there, et cetera. Trump, like, did an executive order saying I'm repealing it. He can't do that.
No, Congress, nor does he understand what it is or what it means.
No. Congress tried doing it through an appropriations bill, but the Senate said no, and then they had to reconcile their bills, and the final version of it did not have it in there. This was, I think it was late last year when that happened, but they're still in charge. And this week, the GOP-led House passed another appropriations bill with the Johnson Amendment repeal in it.
Cool.
It didn't get any attention because, believe it or not, there was other crazy-ass stuff in the news, but it happened again. The Senate's version, currently, this is to fund the IRS and some other agencies. They included this stipulation in there, basically saying you can't go after it. You can't go after any churches if the pastor promotes somebody from the pulpit, with one exception. They said if the commissioner of the IRS determines that there should be an exemption or that it should be denied, then the commissioner can override you.
Okay.
But otherwise, the IRS can't go after these churches. This is what passed in the House.
Okay.
The Senate's version doesn't have it. They're going to have to reconcile these again. But we don't know what's going to happen. And just so we're clear on this, like, thousands and thousands of Christian leaders who are not the evangelical ones we often think of, a lot of them have said, please don't do this.
Yeah.
We don't want to lose. We don't want our churches becoming political.
Right.
And if this tax exemption goes away, you're kind of forcing our hand. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to do that. We think we should keep these separate.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, church-state separation groups have said the same thing.
Right.
But that's it. There's nothing else to say here other than, you know, contact your senators in this case and say, make sure this doesn't get through. Make sure that the Johnson Amendment repeal is not included in the final version of this funding bill.
Yeah.
If you're interested, it's called the Fiscal Year 2019 Financial Services and General Government Appropriations Bill. It's a long title, but it's the funding for the IRS.
Punchy.
Tell them don't repeal the Johnson Amendment.
So when it comes to the Johnson Amendment, the impetus to repeal it is among GOP people who want to
utilize
the church to boost their numbers. Is that?
Yeah, it's coming from a couple different places. There are conservative Christians, that's a lot of those non-denominational mega churches, who say, seriously, let me tell people who to vote for. I have a congregation that is very large, and like I don't like dancing around it. They'll say, like, look, only this election's coming up, and if you care about abortion, or in their case, you know, you care about stopping abortion, make sure you're voting your values. They'll say things like that. That is actually legal.
Yeah,
but they just are like
subtle.
It's
not like ramping up to 2016, like people were unclear where their church stood.
Yeah.
One side or the other, people were very upfront about their beliefs.
Yeah, and they just are like, just let me tell them to vote for the Republican. And not, so that's part of it. The other part of it, and some pastors want to do this without getting penalized and losing their tax exemption, is to say, we want to raise money. because we're a nonprofit and we want to actually, if the tax exemption thing wasn't an issue, they could also say we want to donate as a church or something.
Oh.
And remember, churches don't have the same transparency. They don't have to list who their donors are. They don't have to list the amounts.
Transparency is a thing of the past right now.
So a lot of politicians want to do this because they would be getting a lot of a lot of Republicans want to do this because churches could basically become dark money funneling places. People could give money to their church.
Just like Jesus.
But really, the church is donating to the candidates. And it's just, I don't know why they want it, because it basically takes away the veneer that they're actually in this for Jesus or heaven.
Yeah.
It's just another way of doing politics, speaking a different language.
Yeah. I wonder if it is sort of from, from a pastor's point of view, if it's a power grab of, I can make my church a huge hub for you, and in return, you'll make me your spiritual advisor, and I can
You'll stop by my church, or you'll hype my church, or whatever. I mean, they'll feel like they're connected to the government. That's why a lot of evangelicals who are prominent have signed on to Trump's spiritual advisory panel. I think one has left since they began, and the others are just like, oh, he shouldn't have done that. I'm not leaving, but he shouldn't have done. Like, that's about as worse as they've gotten. Or that's the most courageous thing they've done, really.
So brave.
But yeah, I mean, I don't really know why they think it would be good on their end to turn church into just a political game. I mean, people have no reason to go to church now. Like, we see the numbers dwindling. I imagine that a lot of people would just not want to be part of it.
Oh,
if
yeah,
that happened.
For sure. If, like, especially when you get, you know, the political kind of election fatigue around.
Yeah,
when, in
it's
the fall,
Sunday morning.
The
it's
last
a weekend. Don't
do.
Make me think about this now. So, anyway, here's a different political story, but it kind of goes along similar lines, because everything does. in Pennsylvania, there is a governor named Tom Wolf. He is a Democrat. He's running for re-election this year.
Okay.
He's favored to
you
win.
You said governor?
Governor.
Okay.
Yeah, he's favored to win. It leans Democratic. Fine. A guy named Scott Wagner is the Republican opponent trying to challenge him. I think he's a former state senator. He has some government experience and name recognition.
Uh-huh.
I believe he already won the primary, and he's going to be up against Tom Wolf in November. And one of the things that's interesting about this guy, as you do the opposition research, as you learn about this guy's past, is that at a conference for, like, the gas industry, the fossil fuel industry, last year, not a long time ago, he was basically making a typical conservative speech, like, yeah, we should drill. No, we don't want to preserve.
Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, why not? And one of the things he said is that, you know, climate change, he said, yeah, maybe it's happening, but we don't really have to worry about it. And this is specifically what he said. He did this thing that a lot of conservatives do. Like, I accept climate change. I just don't think man has anything to do with it. Or, you know, we can't control it. There's nothing
this
we can do to stop it.
This isn't the body heat guy, is it?
Oh, body heat guy. So here's what he says. Quote, I haven't been in a science class in a long time, but the Earth moves closer to the sun. But the Earth moves closer to the sun every year. You know, the rotation of the Earth. We're moving closer to the sun. I'll pause there. First of all, what? Like, what? Rotation of the Earth does not really have this impact on the climate.
See, imagine that's it's not like a top that it keeps, like, wobbling closer in.
And if it just keeps wobbling, it'll do inception fall down or something.
Haven't, is that a thing? Are we moving closer to the sun?
We are not.
Okay, I didn't think it was, but he said it was such white
guy
confidence.
We're in an elliptical orbit,
yeah.
So sometimes we're going closer to the sun and sometimes further away.
Okay.
But if we were moving closer and closer every year.
Yeah, with like, significant enough movement to affect our change. Oh, yeah. No.
Then he thinks we're getting warmer because we're getting closer and closer, but that would mean we're getting out of our orbit. And we're going to get sucked in.
So he's basically a scientist.
We're not getting closer. If anything, maybe we're moving slightly further away from it, but that's a different story. And then he goes on to say, we have more people, you know, humans have warm bodies.
Yes.
Is heat coming off? Things are changing, but I think we are, as a society, doing the best we can. No, we're not. By the way, unquote.
No,
we're not. But like humans having warm bodies also that not is how climate change
incredible.
Works.
Incredible.
Okay, so this happened last year. Uh-huh. Everyone knows he said this. Like, they're going to use it against him. This is not a surprise. But he was doing a town hall meeting this week. And, of course, there is a environmentalist group in the area that's one of those, like, we're going to show up and ask you about this stuff. Good on them. They showed up. A 18-year-old woman named Rose Strauss was the representative from that organization who was at his particular town hall meeting.
Cool.
18.
That's
and she
awesome.
Shows up and she asks a question and she got called on to ask it. And basically, she questioned his belief that climate change has something to do with body
How
heat.
How dare she?
And she also point blank said, like, I'm not quoting here. She said, like, does your anti-science stance have something to do with the fact that you've gotten $200,000 from these fossil fuel companies?
Yes, girl, yes.
So good on her for asking the question. And he didn't just defend the climate change denial. What he said to her was, well, I appreciate you being here. You're 18 years old.
No, stop it.
You know,
bad start.
You're a little young and naive. And then he said other bullshit that doesn't matter. But you're young and naive.
What?
Sit down, little girl.
Rick.
You don't know what you're talking
about.
What's
this guy's name, Dick Wolf?
A guy who's not going to be governor. His name is Scott Wagner. And
Dick Wolf is
Dick
the
Wolf
executive
is the
producer.
SVU guy.
CSI. Not CSI. CSI?
SVU.
SVU?
How do I know this?
I don't know. Because you watch bad TV. I watch excellent TV like The Great British Bake Off.
Nicely done. Yeah. Better to be, as one person said on Twitter, which I loved, better to be young and naive than old and corrupt.
I was going to say, like, and old and an asshole.
She's young as if, like, her being 18 makes her unqualified to ask a totally legitimate question. He wouldn't, it's not like he would have been like, oh, you're 40? All right, I'll answer it. No. So, like, don't dismiss her for her age. It was a good question. And then, naive. She's right.
What a
like she's the one who knows about climate change. He's the guy who hasn't taken a science class and brags about it.
Yeah, she just took a science class last year at high school.
She said to a reporter later, like, I could tell he was being dismissive of me as a woman and a young person.
Good. Yeah. She knows. Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed for him.
Right? So he's
Fuck
running
that
for governor.
Guy.
Yes. Do you want to go?
Did he get primaried? You said he's a Democrat, right?
No. I mean, Wagner is the Republican who's going up against Wolf.
Oh, okay.
You
so I didn't make up
guy.
Wolf.
You didn't make up Wolf.
Oh,
Wolf
God.
Is the Democrat.
Thank God. I thought I had a little stroke.
No, it's all good. That's coming later in the show. I don't know. Let's go to the one. I think you had something about this. Maria Butina.
Yeah, Butina. Maria Butina. So this has been a wild week, even in comparison to all of the other wild weeks that we've had since November 2016. So it turns out a Russian spy infiltrated the NRA. So this woman is, and I would say not well, like she wasn't super stealthy on it.
No, she was pretty, I mean, when you have a Facebook page with your real name on
it.
Yeah.
Maria Butina, it's Butina or Butina?
One of the other.
Butina, we're going to call it. Mm-hmm. She's a 29-year-old American University graduate student, and she tried to broker secret meetings between Trump and Putin and establish a back-channel line of communication. So this was...
And she just got arrested for all this, which is how we kind of know, she's a bad one.
Yes. So she was in a relationship of some type with Paul Erickson, who's 30 years her senior. He's a former media advisor. In addition to other things that he is, I did find out he's a former media advisor to John Wayne Bobbitt. Do you remember who that is?
Yes.
He's a gentleman who had his peen cut off by his wife. I don't know a lot about that story, actually.
I know way too much about that story.
Why?
I think they're either Lorena's making a movie about it, or like both of them have been doing, or Lorena Bobbitt has been doing media about it.
Well, apparently,
and I can't remember why
he went on. John Wayne Bobbitt went on like a national tour and like sold knives that said "Love Hurts" on them. It's wild stuff.
It's it's the sort of story that would take your attention before Trump came around,
right? Like this would have been this would have been the craziest story of Hillary Clinton's 2018.
Yeah, and now it's like, when did that happen? 20, 25 years ago? It happened when I was a kid. 90s. So, whatever.
Why are we
talking about this?
Paul Erickson.
Oh, right. Media consultant for
him. Media consultant. So he's just connected to the right in general, specifically the Christian right. And he's in his late 50s. And who she played him, like, in a way that I feel pretty embarrassed for him.
I mean, I don't even care about the age difference, but it's like, when that sort of thing happens, you have to wonder, someone's in this for some reason.
Well, I was listening to either Pod Save America or Hysteria, one of those crooked media ones, and somebody who worked in the White House was like, if you are anywhere and anybody foreign starts to flirt with you, it's a big fucking red flag, and apparently nobody told this dude.
Right.
So
the thing that was surprising.
So the important thing is, not only did this woman infiltrate the NRA, but she also used these connections through Erickson to infiltrate the religious right in leading up to the 2016 election. So, for example, there's a guy named Eric Metaxas.
Yeah, he's one of these guys who wrote one book that got rave reviews from critics.
Was it about Texas? It
was about something to do with World War II. Bonhoeffer.
Oh no! You know what? It was about a guy who was persecuted by the Nazi Party for standing opposed to the Holocaust.
That's right.
So this guy was
he wrote a historical book about that guy that got really good reviews, and now he thinks of himself as like, I'm this intellectual who happens to be a conservative, but I wrote this book that got all these good reviews. But everything about him screams like religious right, conservative views, Rush Limbaugh types.
Despite the fact that he wrote a book that was like, I feel like we see a lot of revisionist history books from the right.
Yeah,
of like,
that one did not see that one get the same treatment.
No, like, from what I understand, it was a good telling of that particular story.
So Metaxas gets involved in this. Why?
So she went on his show. He had a show. I think it was a radio show. All I saw was show. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was a podcast.
Radio.
Is it radio? Yeah. So they discussed gun rights and religious freedom. And so she's coming to the table with like this whole Russia and America need to get together on gun rights, which I just found out like Russia
doesn't do gun rights or guns.
But I mean, they have like strict gun laws and it's like, oh yeah, you need to get your permit renewed every 5 years. You have to be over 18. Cool. That sounds fair. So she worked for several years as the assistant to Alexander Torshin, who is a senior Russian official beloved by the prayer breakfast crowd in Washington. His favorite issues included gun rights and religious freedoms.
Of course it is.
And he was a regular attendee of the National Prayer Breakfast.
Here's what's interesting about the National Prayer Breakfast. Every day there's like that National Day of Prayer that they basically just co-opted as a, you know what, it's a National Day of Prayer for everybody, but really it's just like, conservative Christians.
Asterisk, just Christians.
It's not like there's a lot of Muslims showing up to D.C. Right. on that day, whatever. But on the National Day of Prayer, they also do this National Prayer Breakfast, which the president is invited to and usually speaks at. Uh-huh. Obama did it many times. Mm-hmm. Trump did it too, for obvious reasons now. But the thing about this gathering is that because so many big name people come to it, including the president, and including a lot of big wigs on Capitol Hill, and a lot of religious right figures, they all show up to the National Prayer Breakfast. And it's not, if I wanted to chat with some of these powerful people in D.C., there's a couple ways to do it.
Yeah.
One is I can make an appointment with their office. Uh-huh. Let me sit and talk to you. But now there's records of it.
Right.
But if I don't want anyone to know,
or I can throw
you
a
show up to the party.
On.
Yeah, you show up at the party
Eat
that the guy's going to be at.
Yeah.
And this is what happened. Like, the National Prayer Breakfast is this wonderful way of networking among people and lobbying among people who really don't want anyone to know they're lobbyists or are lobbying for these issues. They don't want a record of it. So when they say she infiltrated the National Prayer Breakfast, she had the in
she had
to
in
that
with
crowd.
These people.
She used it to try to persuade people in power of the same thing she talked to Metaxas about.
Right.
And that's what they mean when they say, like, she had this in. She used them. Because what were they going to do? They don't care. She supports religious freedom.
She
likes
made it to
our
the breakfast.
People.
She must be.
Then you're one of us. Come
yeah,
on
she's
in.
Like in the second row of that.
Yeah. So
she was also part of a group that attempted to secure a meeting with the Trump campaign in May 2016 to talk about, wait for it, the persecution of Christians around the world, which is a super interesting topic to many American Christian evangelicals. She also helped Christian conservative advocate Rick Clay. He made a similar meeting request through Torsion, who is her boss. And the email suggested that the Russians believed that they, quote, shared Christian values with the Trump campaign. And he said that he and Butina are both life members of the NRA.
Of course. The thing that bugs me is that they didn't do any vetting of her. They just let her in because she said, I believe the stuff you believe. And that just gave her,
well, she's a young,
like,
pretty white
ticket.
Woman. Like, what could she do wrong in their eyes?
And they just totally fell for it. Mm-hmm. And the NRA fell for it. Because what do they care? Again, if you say you agree with their values,
right,
then they just stop asking questions. They'll let you do whatever. It worked for Trump, too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you support our cause? We'll let everything else slide. That is what they did with her. And that is how she basically got her way into the most powerful people in the government to the point where she could influence them on these issues.
Yeah.
And she just got caught. And that also means, and this is kind of what's up in the air now, what does that mean for the NRA? What does that mean for the National Prayer Breakfast when, like, everyone who kind of follows this stuff knows, like, you don't really care about the religion stuff.
Right.
You could do that in church.
Right.
This is really about something. Like, you got used because people know this is all about politics and networking and lobbying, just like the NRA. Like, if you cared about gun rights, there's other issues that you used to care about.
Right.
But now it's just a political game for you. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I think it's really fascinating to see that, like, this pro-America, like, anti-immigrant, like, this quintessential pro-America group has been infiltrated by the Russians. I find it really funny. and there is an article on Slate I saw by Ben Mathis Lilly, and he wrote a paragraph I really enjoyed. It is, Christian conservatives, including Pat Buchanan and Brian Fisher, have fawned over Putin in recent years, along with having an affinity for authoritarian leadership. These men respect Putin's years-long rollback of gay rights and abortion access. Franklin Graham, for example, gave an interview to a Russian newspaper in 2015 in which he praised Putin for, quote, protecting Russian young people against homosexual propaganda, end quote. Other cultural conservatives see Russia as, quote, Christianity's front line against Islam. Presumably, then, it wasn't hard for Butina, a friendly Russian gun rights activist, to curry favor in these same Christian conservative circles.
Again, as soon as you tell them, I care about that one issue, everything else, they just stop caring about. They don't look for it. They don't care about it.
It is so wild that the Christian right is willing, and Trump specifically, but it seems like the right in general, are so willing to cry persecution, cry enemy, oh, Canada is being mean to us, the EU is our real enemy. But when a country is obviously, invisibly, and not subtly trying to not just undermine, but infiltrate and sort of cripple us from within, they're like, but no gay people, so everything else is fine. It really is a wild thing to me that they are so willing to die on the hill of anti-gay activism and anti-choice.
Just the lip service to religious freedom, too.
It's just...
That really is for them.
Yeah, it's just wild to me that, like, they are willing to sacrifice all at the altar of ending women's choice and punishing gay people for making them slightly uncomfortable and questioning their own life. It's when you look at the scale of what's happening right now, the real true scale and what the fallout is going to be. And it really is because they don't like brown people and they think abortions are bad.
Yep. Everything else slides.
It's just, how is that even?
They're very narrow, tunnel visioned about the things they care about.
Is
and
that
if you,
why they're winning elections, though? Is it because
those the number of people who have that same tunnel vision about those same few issues, there's a bunch of them. And if you could just say activate, because this issue's on the table, all of them go vote. Our people are like, eh, it's not my favorite person, so I'll stay home.
It's a real, quick sidebar. I was driving home from work today. I work in Schaumburg, so I was taking 355 southbound. And around, like, Swift Road area, I saw this. I'm showing Hemet a picture.
It is two people on top of an overpass. Three people on top of an overpass holding a banner that says, abortion takes human life. Also taking human life, staring at that banner and taking a picture while on the highway, but I guess that doesn't matter.
I was under control because I not only took this picture, but I did flick them off as I drove under the bridge because I'm 6 years old. But the weirdest thing, the most wild thing about it, first of all, it's raining all day in Chicago.
Yeah.
But this is maybe three, probably high school age, maybe college age young women.
Yeah.
And the weirdest thing about it is two of them are holding the banner and they're all doing like a pageant wave. It was the wildest thing I've ever seen.
It's quite the billboard.
Anyway, so I took a picture and I flicked them off. So I really
showed
them.
So you won
them.
That round.
I sure did. And I have dark nail polish, so they could definitely see them.
We're going to come back to politics in a little bit because there's other stories I want to talk about. But let me take a break for a second. And here's a random story about anti-vaxxer Jenny McCarthy. We know she says she's not an anti-vaxxer. She says she just wants vaccines spread out over time,
Shut
even though no
fuck
medical
up, Jenny
expert,
McCarthy.
No scientist.
You took how many pictures of you sitting on a toilet because that's your version of humor? Like,
I did too. Nobody
maybe
laughed.
I'm not going
You're welcome. I mean, she says she's not a science denier. She is. She doesn't care what the scientists say. Anyway, this isn't even about that, but it goes to show you just how in denial of science and incapable of reason she is. She posts this video on her Facebook page this week and all of her social media that says, quote, haunted, just happened in my house. I had to look at the security tape
haunted
to prove
haunted?
It. Haunted.
Oh.
I had to look at the security tape to prove it. Basically saying there's a ghost in her house and she
and
had
security
a
tape
she had
it?
A security tape that proved it because the security tape shows her kind of just walking around randomly in the house and then all of a sudden the piano starts playing and no one else is there and you could see the piano.
That piano has been dead for 50 years.
The way the camera is located, you can't see the keys of the piano, but you could see the piano and it just starts playing out of nowhere. So she posts that. This is like she has proof that ghosts exist. And then you start reading
Pack
the
it
comments.
In, guys.
Then you start looking at the comments and by the way, in the video, you can also hear her screaming to her husband, Donnie Wahlberg.
I forgot they were married. Yeah.
Where she's like, Donnie, someone just played the piano. Someone just played the piano. He's like, who? I don't know, Donald. Donald, it played just now. Anyway,
Donald.
People chimed in with the comments where they're like, that's not your piano. Google Home turned on, and that's the chime that rings when the...
Shut the fuck up. Really?
I don't know what activated it in her case, because I don't use this particular thing. But basically, something in the house got triggered the sensors, and Google's home device, like Alexa or whatever, booted up, and that's the sound that was coming. You could go online and hear it for yourself. Like the chime, it's the exact same one as in her video. She has not responded to those people.
So
all
do
week.
You think she was earnest and dumb or cynical and dumb? Sorry.
I think she genuinely didn't know where it was coming from and thought it. But here's the thing. She didn't know where it was coming from. Fine, I'll give her that.
Right.
But to jump to my house is haunted, ghost. It's a ghost. It's like, no, you don't know how to critically think. You didn't even bother exploring this or asking around. You didn't say, where is this noise coming from? Can anyone help me?
Was she in the same room with the piano?
Yes. And
she couldn't tell that it wasn't the piano.
She just jumps to it. It's just like, look, all of us have been criticizing her for years for being anti-science, for not understanding like how science works and why the experts say the things they say. She just proved it for a whole, like, the dumbest possible way, she did it.
I'm embarrassed for her, but, like, I don't think she's ever embarrassed for herself, so she doesn't need it from me.
This is totally off track from everything else going on. This is not
further
even
off track
sensitive.
Than a ghost in Jenny yes. McCarthy's piano.
I forgot even where I saw this piece, but it's a legal article that is about to be published in a law journal, and for some reason it made it to my inbox, and I'm reading it. And here's the setup for it. And I found this to be a fascinating thing to read. Like, it took me a couple hours to get through the whole thing, but totally worth it. Okay, very easy to read as someone who's not a lawyer. It's like, oh, I can totally follow this argument. I get what he's doing. Here's the backdrop to make sense of it.
Okay.
If you've ever donated blood, you know that they ask you, if you're a man, they ask you, have you had sex with another man in the past year? If the answer is yes, you cannot donate. There
and
is a ban.
For women, they ask you, have you had sex with a man who has had sex with another man in the last year?
Right. Mm-hmm. And basically, there is a ban on MSM, men who have sex with men. Technically, or more broadly, it's like it's a gay ban. It's a ban on gay men donating blood, but really,
really
it applies
fucked
to...
fucked up and antiquated. You
know, yeah, and it came from the 1980s. They were really worried about AIDS, and they knew blood supply was important, and gay men were more likely to have AIDS. So they just said, we're not taking your blood.
Yeah. And now they have so much blood. That's why they call me once a week to ask if they can have more of mine.
And the thing is, they have better detectors now. I mean, they're not just taking your blood and pouring it into somebody else. They do the tests. They know how to figure out if your blood is tainted or not.
What if that's how it works?
Yeah, they're just like, hey,
just
I need blood.
Like a Capri Sun and just squirt.
Sorry, the straw didn't go through, right? So that ban exists. Now, here's the thing. The technology is out there to make sure your blood is not tainted.
Yeah.
So, like, we should be able to use that, right? But yet the FDA says, nope, it's still a year. And that's a new ban. It used to be you couldn't donate at all.
Period.
But a couple of years ago, literally a couple of years ago, they said, all right, we'll make it a year. If you had sex with another guy like more than a year ago, fine, you could donate. And then we'll run the test like we do everybody's.
The phantom HIV but will definitely clear it up by then.
Anyway. In other countries, they don't do this. Like Japan and the UK, it's 6 months or 3 months.
Why is it
period.
Even a thing?
In Italy and Spain, they don't have it at all.
Well, Italy doesn't have laws. Everyone knows that.
But basically,
boogied out.
Why is it a year long? There's a couple reasons. One is the religious right does not want, they'll fight tooth and nail to make sure that gay men do not get. Like, they're not infiltrating the blood supply. That's one reason. Another one is there is fear from the government that, like, look, if any shit happens with any of the blood that gets donated, maybe it's long shot that even after we test it, but whatever. Mm-hmm. If they trace it back to a gay guy who happened to have sex with someone, like, a month ago, and it turns out that's tainted, think about the drama that would ensue from that. And maybe to a lot of people, including gay rights advocates, that's not worth the trouble. Anyway, this is the backdrop.
What's so my face doing?
It's very upset. And the rolling
incredulous.
Eyes. Yes. So anyway, here's the thing that this professor did. His name is, I'm going to say it wrong, whatever, Brian Susek. He is from UC Davis School of Law. His paper basically says there is a way to overturn it. Overturn the one-year ban.
Okay.
He's like, what would you do if you were trying to come up with a legal argument for how to get rid of that ban? And he said the most, the easiest answer to give is to say, we've made so much progress on gay rights, you know, the gay marriage is legal, things like that. Can't you just say this is discriminatory against gay people? The problem with that, he says, is it would never work, more or less, because the FDA, the government, will just say, like, look, we don't want to discriminate against them. This is about safety. This is about something unrelated to their sexual orientation.
We're not discriminating against gay men. We're discriminating against men who sleep with men. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is a legitimate, credible statement coming from their thing. We're not, like, just saying, well, we don't like gay people, so let's just institute this.
I'm trying
they
to think
have
of
a reason.
Clever legal workaround. My brilliant legal mind is failing me.
So, well, that's what he's for, right? Like, he can do that. So he's saying the discrimination aspect, probably not going to work. So what he says is...
it's an invasion of privacy thing? No.
No, because they have to ask about your risk factors.
Yeah.
So basically he says, here's the way you could do it, theory. And I'm going to shorten this, like, long paper that he wrote. But he says, what you do is you pull off what the religious right has been doing for a long time, which is using a religious freedom argument. And he says, if you could find a gay Catholic, let's say, as an example. Everyone knows that. And he says, like, let's say you had a gay Catholic who didn't follow Catholic beliefs and actually had sex with other guys, which goes against the church, but whatever, so do a lot of Catholics. So he didn't even, like, doesn't even matter. He said, if you found a gay Catholic who said, look, my religious beliefs say I have to do charity work, and giving blood, according to the Catholic Church, is a really powerful way of helping other people. And if you do that, you're doing good. You're doing something really important in society. The Catholic Church encourages blood donation. And if you could find someone with the sincerely held belief in Catholicism who said, your ban on me being able to donate blood is hurting my religious freedom. Because what's the alternative? You're saying either I can't donate blood, and that hurts my religious standing, or you say you can't have sex for a year, which is another type of, that's a burden that I shouldn't have to deal with, the government telling me you can't have sex for a year. And here's what Brian Susick says. He says, using that argument like that the Hobby Lobby people have used, that Christian bakers have used to get away from it, this is, and I'm going to quote this because it was interesting, he said, the case is a coin toss. Heads, gay rights advocates win because it overturns the ban. Tails, religious conservatives lose. And what he says is, even if we lost the case with this method, a lot of different, the judges would have to give you a reason for it to lose.
But wouldn't the reason just be, this isn't your only option to do community service?
He mentioned that.
Okay.
He, Susick mentioned
good.
That. He said,
I'm at least as smart as a brilliant lawyer.
Right. He says, actually, let me give you that one.
Thank you. Because that's like the whole I'm saying.
Yeah, that's, here's one example of what that means. Let's say the judge says, we're not going to overturn the ban because the government isn't imposing a, quote, substantial burden on your faith.
Right.
Because donating blood is a marginal religious practice. You could volunteer at a soup kitchen instead and do an act of charity.
Right.
But what is the judge doing? He asked, Brian Susick asked, like, what's the judge doing there? He's saying, it's on me to decide which of your beliefs is more important than one, like, than another. You said donating blood is the thing that I need to be able to do. And the judge is stepping in and saying, no, you don't. You could do something else and it would fit your religious rules.
Oh.
But when the judge, so even if you lost, the judge has now stepped in and said, I'm going to decide which of your religious beliefs matter more than the other. And by doing that, you're actually hurting the religious right in the process because they've been able to get away with, you know, Hobby Lobby said, I'm not signing a paper that lets me get away from not providing contraception for my employees because this is something that matters to us. And the court said, well, it's not our position to tell you that doesn't really matter. If this is a belief that you have, then we got to side with you. So even if the gay Catholic loses, the judge is now giving this reason, and that could be used against the religious right. And the thing is, there were like five different ways to lose this case, all of which would kind of hurt the religious right.
Huh.
It was fascinating. Like I said,
that's
really
very
interesting.
Interesting. And do you think we'll ever get beyond thought experiment?
No. And that was part four of his paper. He said, here's why it'll never happen,
oh,
or
cool.
possibly why it won't happen. Like I said, it was fun
it's
to read.
A little bit of masturbation on his part then, huh?
That's what a law review does. Like, let me work through the implications of this. And then at the
In
end,
conclusion.
He's like, here's why no one's pursuing this. Like, part of it is maybe they haven't thought of it. Maybe. That's the masturbation part. Like, maybe they just haven't thought of it and I'm the clever one.
Right.
But realistically, even if this becomes a thing, here's a section I want to quote it was interesting. Trying to advance the rights of gay men, already traditional targets of disgust, in the context of something as disgust-inducing as blood, you're putting together two things a lot of people really don't like. And you're trying to make an argument for gay rights in a sense. Okay. Whereas for like marriage equality, everyone loves marriage. Everyone loves love and you love gay people. It's like, why would you be against that? Right. That was kind of the argument that a lot of people were making.
Right.
Well, when it comes to blood, it's like, I'm not even going to get excited about this.
Yeah.
Case.
I'm not going to march about this.
Yeah, exactly. And he said the other thing is going back to the tainting idea, like if this worked and a gay man could give blood and something happened and there was tainted blood in some way, the backlash may not be worth it to them. So maybe that's another reason they won't pursue it. Anyway,
How often does that happen, though?
Very, very rarely.
Okay.
Because they test it, but they could do more tests if they wanted to.
I'm sure they find, like, tainted blood, but, like, that it gets into somebody else's body is what I'm
saying.
Yeah,
it's rare, but it happens. But, you would think that if they were concerned about it, just do more tests.
Yeah,
wait a period of time. If you were worried that the blood wouldn't be infected, like, right away and the test didn't catch it, just do it 3 months from now before you use the blood. Whatever. We're going to have a link to that paper if you want to read it. It's free. It's not one of those buy a journal subscription, whatever, this way. I found it really interesting to read as someone who cares about church-state separation.
Sure.
And it was just very readable and not jargon heavy and stuff like that. Anyway.
No, it's really interesting.
Random, I thought, yeah. Do you want to talk about, here's one. Let's talk about Dawkins.
Oh, what did he do?
That's the right answer. So Richard Dawkins, who has been more or less controversy-free for a while now.
For like 3 or 4 years.
Right. Remember, he had a minor stroke a couple of years ago, and basically his doctor said, you know what exacerbates this stress that you're having that causes it? Controversy and Twitter. Stay off. Don't do anything stupid. And he basically stayed off social media for a long time. And now, and even when he came back, he posted really innocuous things, just like, hey, go support this, go read that link, whatever. He was basically sitting outside a cathedral, not like last week.
Oh, I did.
And here is basically, I think here's what he wanted to say. He heard the chimes playing. This is his Anglican tradition. He grew up with that music. And I think what he wanted to say is, that's beautiful music. Mm-hmm. And like, I can be an atheist and say that's beautiful music, even though it's coming from a church. And he said that before in interviews too, by the way. He said in 2013, like, I suppose I'm a cultural Anglican and I see like religious services in a church much through the same eyes as I see a village cricket match on the village green.
Sure.
I have a certain love for it. Totally, totally understand that. Here's what he wrote with a picture of himself standing, sitting on a bench in front of that church. Here's what he wrote. Listening to the lovely bells of Winchester, one of our great medieval cathedrals. So much nicer than the aggressive-sounding Allahu Akbar. Or is that just my cultural upbringing? Question mark.
What is he referring to?
So during the Muslim prayer, they use the phrase Allahu Akbar, which is also a phrase that terrorists use before they blow up like a suicide bomb.
Yikes.
In a different context.
What's it? Do you have a loose translation?
God is great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know why the suicide bombers are saying it, and you know why regular Muslims, peaceful Muslims,
Dawkins,
are saying it. So he's like, so much nicer than the aggressive sounding God is great, or is that just my upbringing? Yeah, first of all, yes, it's just your upbringing.
Super yes.
Because if you grew up in a mosque, that probably sounds nice and comforting to you because you know what it's like.
And
you know what they're meaning, and you know the context. But the other, like, if you back away from the exact words of the tweet, what did he do? Here's something nice I want to share with you, but let me put down other people just because I can.
Oof.
And then let me try to defend it by like bashing the social justice people. Like, are you going to be mad at me because it's my culture? Like, you didn't even have to use the last two lines, but you did. A lot of people responded. A lot of people were angry. I don't really think the comments saying he's racist or Islamophobic have a lot of value to me, because I don't think he's sitting there saying, like, I hate brown people. I don't think he's sitting there saying I hate Muslims, because he's defended Muslims. He was very vocal against Donald Trump's travel ban that affected Muslims, because, like, he's all for civil rights.
Right.
He's all for religious freedom. So I don't think it's any of that. I think that those are cheap shots that you just want to call him a name or you want to put a label on him.
Mm-hmm.
Those are easy ones to use. I'm not defending his tweet. It's a stupid, ignorant tweet. But here's the thing that really got to me. For so long, tell me how many times you've heard atheists, prominent ones especially, say something like this. You know, we condemn religion, but not the religious. We condemn faith, but not the faithful. You know, people deserve respect, but not their beliefs.
Yeah.
Right? It's our version of that, right?
Yeah.
And here he is, like, not criticizing Islam or a specific belief within a religion that he thinks is wrong. And even then, he didn't have a reason to criticize it.
Right.
He's just flat out insulting peaceful Muslims who have a couple words in a prayer that he doesn't like the sound of it. He doesn't, and he doesn't like the tone of it. He doesn't, Like,
and it's aggressive, which is a super dog whistly term.
And then I've also heard a lot of people defending Dawkins, saying like, well, it's just his opinion. But it's like, no, it's not just a random...
it's just his opinion. Cool. I think that...
He's being a dick on purpose. Like, you can criticize him for saying stupid stuff. I don't think it's coming from a place of hate. I do think it's coming from a place of total ignorance.
Yes.
And it doesn't help because as someone who writes about this stuff, it's like, it's very easy for me to be able to say, they're not criticizing you, they're criticizing your beliefs. I think it's when Kim Davis was in the news all the time in Kentucky, mm-hmm. it's like, we see all these people criticizing the way she looks, the way she says things. It's like, right.
That's
don't
not
do
helpful.
That. That's not helpful. There's good reasons to dislike the stuff she's doing. Focus mm-hmm. on that. Same thing with like women in the news, too, if they're like Trump women in his circles. It's like, oh, man, people call them names. That's not helping. There's legit reasons to attack Sarah Huckabee Sanders that have nothing to do with all that other stuff. And here's Dawkins just saying, like, hey, those peaceful Muslims in a church, I don't like the way they sound. I don't like the way they do their prayers, even when they're peaceful. Like, that is destroying the very narrative that he's trying to push.
The wild thing is, like, there is something in that message that could be interesting about how, like, oh, isn't it interesting that something that symbolizes this religion, which I disagree with just as much as that religion, this sound brings me comfort and this sound doesn't. Right? Isn't that an interesting way to look at the world of, even though I don't believe in the church, right. I find that sound soothing.
Yeah, say that in 240 characters, we're solid. Right. Or whatever it is.
Okay.
But he also, tell me who said this. I don't despise religious people. I despise what they stand for. I like to quote someone who says, I have so much respect for you that I can't respect your ridiculous ideas. That was Dawkins at the Reason Rally in 2012. Like, this is what he said, and then here's this tweet that goes against that. It's not the biggest deal in the world, I realize that, but it's one that I saw so many headlines this week criticizing him in British publications mostly, but saying critics call Dawkins Islamophobic. Critics say he's racist. Like, just attacking him,
well,
but like stepping away from it a bit.
Dawkins' life is unforced errors. He
that's such a good way of putting it.
This is definitely a thing that I like. You know, I'm the first person to be like, just like burn all the white men in a fire. We don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
We've moved past the white men as a concept. Richard Dawkins is somebody who had a huge influence on me. Like, as sort of a baby atheist, I read The God Delusion like so many people did, and it really brought me from thinking atheist, you know, whatever. Everybody has that story, right, of that book that they read. And Dawkins is one of those things, like, he keeps saying dumb things, and I cannot bring myself to not defend him still. He says the dumbest shit, and I'm like, well, let me find the most generous possible reading of this. And it's 1,000% a flaw on my part, and I'm not doing a good job of, like, being a skeptic or being, like, a good social justice person. But I just want him to do good. Like, I just want him to be a force for good.
Right. And that's the thing.
He's
in the same position.
Idiot.
I'm a fan of a lot of the stuff, and then he does other stuff that I'm just, like, cringing at. It's upsetting because, you know, as an atheist who, I'm talking about him, he believes he's an atheist who is a voice of reason, and yet he keeps doing the things, unforced errors, like you said, that make it so easy for everyone else to say, no, he's not.
Well, I also think that he suffers from a thing that many, I'm going to go on a white guy rant for a second. Mm-hmm. He suffers from a thing that many men in general, white men specifically, tend to fall in, that they believe whatever their opinion is was reasoned into and thoughtfully weighed and come to by, is objective, I guess is what I'm saying. Whatever opinion they have is objectively true. Whereas anytime a woman has an opinion, a person of color has an opinion, it is somehow emotionally fraught. And I think when, you know, like, Dawkins isn't just up there calling balls and strikes. He's not just a person who is saying, like, he says opinions all the time that are obvious or subjective on his face. And the fact that he thinks they're objective says a lot about who he is. I mean, he's used to being the smartest guy in a room, right? Like, that's.
And he's treated like the smartest guy.
And he's treated like the smartest guy because he's an extremely smart man. And, like, The Greatest Show on Earth is a very good book about evolution, and I would recommend it. But when it comes to these moments like this, where it really tips his hand, I've been using a lot of metaphors to describe Dawkins a lot of sports metaphors. He tips his hand a lot to be like, I have this opinion, and because of who I am and what people think of me, it's the objective truth. Whereas it's just like a guy with kind of garbage opinions. We all have garbage opinions. We all have opinions that are influenced by our own journey in life and what we've seen and what we've done. So, like, no. And it's not to say people aren't allowed to fuck up or say dumb things. It's just, it's very, very tiresome, and it's disappointing. I think that's been my word of 2018, is I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
And everything all the time. Oh, which reminds me, similar to that, is the Elon Musk thing that's been happening. I've been thinking so much about Elon Musk, which is a phrase I never thought I'd say.
The plan is working.
Oh, my God. Okay. So for those of you who, I mean, it's an international news story. You're not getting this from me. But when the soccer team, the Thai soccer team was trapped in the cave, and they're trying to figure out a way to get them out. Elon Musk was like, here's a submarine, I guess, which like was neither practical. Like, it just wouldn't work.
He swoops in to be the hero, and they're like, we can't use this.
And he's
thing
like,
you
fine,
made.
Just let him drown. Like, he was so pissy about it. And somebody said something to him to that effect on Twitter of like, it was a bad plan. Why did you do that bad plan? And he called the guy who masterminded saving all of these children's lives.
The British diver who
the British
found
diver.
Them,
oh, yeah, yeah, who found them. He called him a pedophile because he didn't know why else a grown man would be in Thailand, which, fuck, let's unpack that for a second. Jesus Christ. Like, do they think Thais only do sexual tourism? Because yikes. And so it just got me thinking about...
There were many tweets, I think, he did defending himself.
No, he's
and like
an asshole. Yeah. But we talked, was it last week? We talked about separating the art from the artist. Like, that's the thing
that
I talked
about. Yeah,
was it a while ago?
Yeah.
And it's a thing that that's my favorite, like I said, it's my favorite thing to like.
Like, if someone wants to buy me a
about.
Tesla, I'll still take it.
You'll still take it.
I'll feel bad, but then I'll start the car.
But then you'll start the car and plug it in and never have to pay for gas.
Yeah.
But. And have those cool door handles that suck into the side of the car.
Really?
Yeah, you've never... Okay, when you're driving by a Tesla, look, like, there's no external door handles. They, like, suck into the side of the car. There's nice. It's very cool.
Were talking about separating.
But we're living in an interesting time where we hear from everybody at all times. So 100 years ago, Elon Musk is giving us these revolutionary inventions. Arguably a little bougie inventions that aren't super helpful for the most poor among us, but that's another conversation for another day. But we don't know what Thomas Edison thought about like little things. And
yeah,
he was probably a big fucking dick. Like Albert, like Stephen Hawking cheated on his wife. Albert Einstein was kind of a nightmare to his wife. Like, we're living in such an interesting age.
Where we get to see this firsthand coming right from them.
And so now it's like everything is tainted and nothing is good. And basically all he has to do is get off Twitter and like, we're good.
There, it reminded me, this is going back to the Dawkins thing. It reminded me of something Christopher Hitchens wrote about in God Is Not Great, which is that going back to the cultural, like Dawkins heard the bells. He's like, this is what I'm used to. It sounds beautiful. Uh-huh. The Muslim prayers I'm not used to. It's aggressive and evil, whatever. Yeah. Christopher Hitchens had a section where he was recounting what some Christian apologist had said to him. Like, if you were walking down the street late at night and you saw someone coming toward you with a Bible, wouldn't you feel better? Like, you wouldn't feel scared
Hitchens
about
said
that.
This?
He was recounting what an apologist had said to him.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Wouldn't you, Christopher Hitchens, feel better seeing somebody late at night who was coming
across
from
the
Bible
fucking
study?
Street. I'll tell you that right
who,
now.
Who was coming from Bible study and had a Bible in his hand. The thinking being like, you would feel better. Religion is good. Mm-hmm. And Hitchens was like, no, I wouldn't feel better. And here's a list of reasons why I wouldn't feel better about mm-hmm. that. But the point is like, what's comforting to one person is not necessarily the same for other people.
And I think that's also another problem with men with opinions like this is a delusion of universality of your own experience. Of this is how I felt about a thing. so this is how everybody should feel about this. And you see this, it manifests itself most on like Twitter and Facebook and things like that when somebody's like, oh, I liked the new Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
And a guy will like faux earnestly be like, I really didn't like about it. Can you give me a beat by beat explanation of what you liked about it? Because he's so like, so unable to separate himself from like objectivity versus subjectivity. He's like, well, I didn't like it. What could a human ever enjoy about this? Tell me, woman, in your womanly ways, what about this was funny?
I don't watch that TV show, therefore I don't get why all these people like that TV show.
Oh my God. You know what I finally got to do? So I found this like little graphic meme thing, and it's like a shitty photoshopped trophy that says on it, like it's engraved, like, you hate a thing people like.
And I've congratulations.
And I've had that for like a year, and I finally got to use it the other day, and I was so proud of myself.
Nice.
It was just literally like, hey! And I was like sitting at my desk at work like, oh, this is a meaningless thing that I'm excited about. God, what is my life?
Here's a short, quick, different story. PRRI, the polling group, they recently did a study about American democracy. It was really lengthy, but they asked one particular question that I thought was interesting. They asked, you know, is the fact that we are growing more diverse, I'm paraphrasing here, is the fact that we're growing more diverse as a nation a positive development?
Oh, God.
And 64% of Americans said it was.
Hey, yeah. I was not sure where that was going.
I know. 85% of Democrats said the trend was a good one, that we are becoming a less white
nation.
Wait, let
me do some quick math. 65% overall.
Overall, 85% Democrats.
What is the other half?
43% are Republicans.
Oh, you don't say.
But when you break it down by religious demographics, by and large, most people did not see this as a bad thing. You could have said, well, I don't think about it. Like, I don't care. I could understand that reasoning. Like, I don't know that it's good. Like, if it's more diverse,
it is
what it is. I could understand that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to who thought it was a bad thing, when it came to Catholics, only 32%, I mean, that's a lot, but like 32%
that
of them said it was
thing?
Bad.
Oh, that's actually really surprising. I thought that would be the biggest group.
Mm-hmm. Religiously unaffiliated, the group we're in, 23% said it was bad. That was among the lowest. So,
it's
still higher than I'm comfortable. Yeah. The only group that was more than half of them said, no, it's a bad thing that
Americans.
White evangelicals.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. They don't like that there are going to be more brown and black people in the country, which is a little weird because guess where Jesus was from?
He was from Detroit, right?
Yeah. Yep. Middle Eastern, that guy. And there you go. One Christian author named Nate Pyle said this on Twitter, and it's worth quoting. Evangelicals go on mission trips to non-white countries to love on the people, but they don't want to love them as actual neighbors.
Yes. I've seen that in like several iterations. And
by the way,
so excellent.
This thing, they also, the same poll said 77% of white evangelicals, 77% maintain a favorable opinion of Donald Trump. And that was before like this month and all the shit that's gone down. 77%, 81 voted for him in 2016, and in essence, his favorability has gone down a little bit. Like,
is there a...
He could kill a fetus and they wouldn't care.
Oh my God. Is there a historical parallel to present-day white evangelicals who claim a moral high ground, but regularly tend to do objectively amoral things? This isn't a question.
The answer
like,
is probably yes, and I can't think of it off the top of my head.
I was thinking it maybe has something to do with like people who supported the rise of Hitler.
Send your answers to @blueberry.
I mean, no, this isn't. I'm not like being a dick. I'm genuinely curious. Like, I know there's a cultural parallel or a
there
historical
has to
parallel
be of people who say one thing and totally.
Yeah, or who specifically like claim moral authority and regularly are objectively immoral when it comes to like taking care of their fellow man.
Yeah, I don't know.
There must be something in like 1930s Germany, right? There must be a group that was like...
the best thing that could happen for evangelicals is they get blown out in 2018 and 2020, and they have to go back to figuring out what the hell being an evangelical means. But
I don't know. I'm just...
Let's go to a happier story.
Fine.
In Alabama, Jefferson County, there's a county commission, and there's an election for the county commission, and two women were running in the Democratic primary last month.
Cool.
For one particular seat on there. One of them was the one who had the seat. She was re-election, running for re-election. The other one happened to be, I think she was a former commissioner who was now somewhere else, and now she wanted her seat back. Whatever. Two women were running for it. The one whose name is Sandra Little Brown, mm-hmm. that's her name. She's the one who's the incumbent who wants to save her seat. Both women got 46% of the votes
wow.
in their primary. It was virtually a tie. They had a runoff.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so they had a runoff this week. So they had a month, basically, to go from, oh, we tied, none of us won. We got to do it again in a month. And Sandra Little Brown put out an advertisement
oh, God.
That was sent to people in the county that basically had a fake ballot with her name bubbled in,
uh-huh.
which, okay, fine, I get it. First of all, her name was in way bigger font than her opponent's, which that's just dickish, but all right. But
it's then, marketing, my dude.
But, like... but yeah, exactly. But then at the bottom, it said, supported by Jesus Christ and his followers.
No!
Her ad said she had the endorsement of Jesus. Which, as someone has pointed
did he
out,
write that? Like,
she wrote that right on the advertisement.
Did Jesus write that?
Oh,
did he?
I'm sure he did. As one person said, like, the last thing we need is another foreigner meddling in our elections. But here's the best part: they had the election this week. She lost.
But Jesus supported her.
Not enough. Jesus didn't support her enough. So Sheila Tyson will be the new Jefferson County Commissioner. I looked on Sandra Little Brown's social media. I sent her a question through Facebook.
What was the question?
Hey, you lost the race. Do you have anything to say about how Jesus... And it was a dickish question, but I wanted an answer.
Oh, you don't say... You haven't?
Hey, what do you say now that you lost the race about Jesus supporting you? I think that was my version of the question. Mm. She never responded. I don't even know if she... I got a red notice on Facebook.
Oh.
I don't know if she saw it. But it was sent to her official page. That said, she has not said a word about it. Since she lost, she has said, like, you know, we ran a good race, whatever, all the usual concession stuff. She hasn't mentioned Jesus at all.
Oh, my God. That's hysterical.
So Jesus didn't help her. In Alabama.
Ay, ay, ay.
That's great.
I mean, they saw through her ruse.
I have a couple other. I have two more quick ones, but.
Can I
go
do,
for one?
Yeah, I've only contributed a tiny bit. I think it was last week we talked about Darla Shine.
Oh, yes. She's the one who wanted to use the N-word really badly, and her husband's now, like, the communications dude for Trump?
Communications director, ?
Sure.
Apparently I didn't write that down. I'm not a good journalist.
Is he Scaramucci, but not Scaramucci?
No, that's... I think Huckabee Sanders is Scaramucci, isn't she?
Maybe.
I don't know.
You can't keep track of these people.
Yeah.
What did Darla Shine do now?
Oh, she was just chill. I just wanted to bring her up.
Mm-hmm.
No, JK, she's super not chill. She used to have a show called The Darla Shine Show, mm-hmm. which her name is Darla Shine. There are so many puns in there, and she went Darla
Rise
Shine
and
Show.
Shine.
See, Hemant, that
you're
was
welcome.
Just like off the top of the dome.
Yeah, you're asking someone who came up with FAP as a podcast name, so whatever. I get no credit for anything.
But anyway, so she's married to Bill Shine, so she herself is not an elected official or an appointed official in any way, but, like, let's rag on her, huh?
Okay.
What else do we have to do? There's so many targets. So in 2009, which is a minute ago, she called herself a sexist, and she said, "Are you ready, Hemant?" She didn't mm-hmm. say, "Are you ready, mm-hmm. Hemant?" That mm-hmm. was me, Jessica.
Yes.
Quote, "You know, there is just a story that these girls, these women who are upset that they are sexually harassed in the military. What do you think is going to happen when you go on a submarine for 12 months with 4,000 horny soldiers?"
So what? They deserve to get assaulted?
Yeah. So...
I can't believe her husband worked at Fox News.
Yeah, and got fired from Fox News because he handled sexual harassment claims so poorly. And the White House is like...
Come on in.
Hello, comrade. Welcome home.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. The last thing I have is about Republicans hating gay people. Do you
what?
Want to get to that or
go
do you
for
want to
it.
Do something else?
Do
I,
it.
I mostly just copied
Tell
this
me about
article.
This. I've never heard about this before.
Yeah. So, you know how Republicans are pro-life and pro-family and
yes,
just really
they love all people
and
not people.
And all that. The House Appropriations Committee on Wednesday passed an amendment following a taxpayer-funded adoption allowing taxpayer-funded adoption agencies to deny LGBTQ families the ability to adopt a child based on religious objection.
If I have this right, because I think we did a story on this, if I have this right, what they said is if your state doesn't give money, if it doesn't fund faith-based adoption agencies, you're basically going to get punished for it. Like, we're going to get you unless you support discriminatory adoption agencies.
Yeah, so if this goes through to the final bill, it would cut 15% of federal adoption funding to states and localities that penalize adoption agencies that refuse to place families in conflict with the agency's, quote, sincerely held
so
religious
belief.
So if
the states are saying we don't want you to discriminate because that would be bad for kids and we're not going to support that.
They're going
to
cut funding.
Then the government says, no, you're not going to do that. We're going to hurt the kids
federal
instead.
Funding. Like, y'all
so
are being too
over...
nice to these kids.
Yeah, we're going to make sure they don't get adopted, all of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's an all-around disappointing and...
totally typical, by the way.
So I just haven't... I don't know how many times per week I can say this, but, like, really, we're having this conversation still?
Only because they're in power. Once they're not, it's like, oh, some one dude
no,
said that thing and we can ignore it.
Please. So the vote in committee was 29 to 23. It was along party lines.
Of course.
The only exception was Scott Taylor, who's a Republican from Virginia. He was the only Republican vote against the amendment. And he had some good quotes here. He said, House Republicans are pandering to their far-right base at the expense of LGBTQ people and children in need of a home. Whoop, no, I lied. That wasn't him. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say.
That's my bad. I misread my quote. That was from Democratic National Committee LGBTQ Media Director Lucas Acosta.
Thank you.
That's on me.
Wait, what did
y'all.
The Republicans say who crossed party lines here? I'm really curious about that when
said,
you find that.
He said nothing.
He said, all right.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, Scott Taylor.
Just the way, because they like in the paragraph, they're like, Scott Taylor did this. And then it started with a quote.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. Scott Taylor
did
it.
Did he
quote.
Vote along party lines?
No. He voted against the amendment. He's the only Republican who voted against it.
We don't know
it,
why yet.
But we don't have a quote from him. I mean, Acosta
well, good
still
on
has
him
some,
anyway.
Good quotes rather than focusing on empowering families. Or uniting children with their parents, Republicans on the House Appropriations Committee voted to give child welfare agencies license to discriminate across the country. LGBTQ candidates are running for office, taking a stand against the Trump GOP agenda.
It doesn't mean it's going to stay in the bill, but it definitely got through this.
It doesn't mean it's
going to
stay
hurdle.
In the bill, but it is. I mean, it's what we're dealing with on the right, and like I.
This is what happens when you put Republicans in power.
It really, and I. I want to be really clear that I'm obviously very liberal, and there isn't a real world that I could see myself voting conservative for any reason. That said, I believe the country is stronger with two reasonable parties. I think that political discourse is important. So I believe the way to alleviate poverty is to provide government funds to make sure families, children, people have mental health care, have a roof over their head, have food every day. To me, that is the way to get people off the streets, say.
I'll do you one better. You could have a government with many competing parties if you just elect Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just...
Yeah.
All the infighting would take care of all of that.
But
these views just totally, they should be out of bounds. They should be on the fringe. Like, let the churches say this crazy stuff. Why is this in the government?
And 20 years ago, there could have been an interesting debate on what's the best way to end poverty. The Republicans think this. The Democrats think this. Maybe the answer is somewhere in the middle. Maybe it's closer to one end or the other. But these are people who have no interest in ending poverty. Right. They have no interest
in
bettering.
Well, they don't want the government doing it. And
they
so
don't want the government doing anything except for holding queer people back, holding women back, and what making...
then staying out of your lives.
And then staying out of my lives until it comes to, like, I have a job and I want birth control, and my evangelical boss is like, no, and it's just astounding that they can hold these truly duplicitous beliefs and pretend that there are these honest... It's this power grab. It is these... Somebody... there's a conservative commentator and analyst who was on Pod Save America this week, and he made a really compelling point that he said, what is the point of being in the Senate? What is the point of serving your country if you're going to kowtow to whatever the president wants or to whatever, like...
I read somewhere, maybe it was Vox, like, the slogan for the Democrats should just be checks and balances, vote Democrat. That should be their new slogan.
Like, what do you think your job is, GOP senators? Like, you're not holding up your end of the bargain. Your end of the bargain is to keep the executive branch in check.
Yeah.
You're literally laying over and showing your tummy to him like a scared dog. It's a dog metaphor, Hammond.
That was good. There's a lying dog right here.
Yeah, I took a picture. Daddy's literally lying at Hammond's feet, and it's the most darling thing I've ever seen.
Is it?
Yeah, it's cute.
Let's make fun of Ken Ham. We haven't done that yet.
Fuck yes. So did he get bigger suits? Is he wearing David Byrne suits now?
He's not there yet. So astronomers at Germany's Max Planck Institute for Astronomy, basically they put out a couple papers recently where they said we captured an image of a baby planet. We see it being formed in a star system far, far away. It's really neat. And basically, how do they do this? What they can do is to say, like, they have telescopes strong enough to kind of see different galaxies. That shouldn't be that surprising at this point.
Yeah.
And what they could see is, like, well, in the solar system there, around the stars, you could see gas and dust kind of swirling around the star. But if the swirl that you expect to see has some sort of deviation in it, something's got to be causing that deviation, and it's usually a planet. But if you can't really see it, like, you might be seeing the formation of a planet.
Cool.
I could totally have that wrong, because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But that's my understanding of it.
Would it just be, like, when the dust and whatever clumps up enough, it starts to have its own gravitational pull, and that affects...
That's a good question, maybe. Don't ask me. Anyway, the people who know what they're talking about said, we see a planet in the process of forming, and that's an amazing thing, because we've never gotten such a clear indication of that before. So it's awesome. Yay, science. So, Answers in Genesis, the Ken Ham organization, they do a show similar to the one we're doing now where they talk about news events, but it's all their stuff.
Yeah, Ann and I talked about when they talked about you specifically.
Oh, great.
And it made me feel extremely uncomfortable.
So it was Ken Ham talking with Dr. Georgia Purdom, their resident PhD, and one other guy, their co-host Bodhi Hodge. They were all talking about this story because here's the dilemma for them. These scientists say this thing is in the process of forming, and... it suggests that new planets are getting created, and it suggests that our planets, like, not just that planets can be created, but that the story of our solar system that is billions of years old has some credibility to it. And that doesn't mesh with their creationist, the Earth is a few thousand years old, the universe is a few thousand years old, doesn't mesh with that. So they were trying to make sense of this story. And, like, how do you do that? And here's how they dismissed it, okay? What they said, this is Ken Ham talking. Here's a school, for instance. Sorry, let me step back. Ken Ham's like, they're going to teach about this stuff in school, and they're going to brainwash the kids. And what they're going to say to the students...
I like my brainwashing better.
Here's what they're going to tell students. Oh, here's a planet being formed. This is a planet being formed right here. But wait a minute. They need to stand back and think, how do they know that? There's something there that they see, and they're assuming, because they believe the whole universe is evolving, that a planet's being born, and, I'm still quoting, they didn't see it being born. Like, what, the star's gonna pop it out on pregnancy, like birthday?
Well, it's a C-section, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, what is he expecting them to see?
Vaginas, Emmett. Don't be ridiculous.
That's what I was going for. Like, again, it's his classic, like, were you there? Yeah, they're there.
Yeah,
they see
it.
That's what they're reporting on. And then later on, they're like, they said there's no way the planet could be born because God created everything in that first 6 days, according to Genesis, whatever, the first few chapters of Genesis. Mm-hmm. So nothing can be created like a planet. So they were like, it's not a planet being born. If they spotted a planet, it's already there. It's not a baby. It's just been there and they didn't know it before. Basically, they're like, well, this can't be true because that's not what the Bible says.
I mean, he's making
so we're just dismissing it.
He's really leaning into the God of the gaps thing, right? Of like, if we can't figure out why it's happening, it must be God. But he's also being like,
he's also like, those scientists are just wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also like, oh, that's happening, but it's not God. Sorry.
Yeah. His explanation is the scientists, there's no way they discovered anything. They're just making up for an explanation for what's already out there.
Right.
And the funniest thing about this is if you look at the papers the Astronomy Institute published, I took a screenshot of one of them. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of PhDs as the co-authors on this paper.
Really?
And here's Ken Ham like, none of these people.
Know anything.
Just cracked me up.
Yeah, there's something really, impressive definitely isn't the right word, but I'm going to use it anyway, of somebody who's like, hey, you people have spent your entire adult life studying a thing. You fucked up.
All of it's a lie.
That's not fair, because that's kind of what we say to religious people, so.
That's what PhDs hear all the time anyway. It's all right. They're used to it.
I saw a Facebook comment the other day. Somebody was super mad that we call PhDs doctors. Like, they're like, doctors mean something. And they're like, PhD, doctor is right there in the name. I don't know what to tell you, my friend.
I'm going to end on a happy note.
Cool.
This is my happy thing for the week, because this is a really cool story, and it's cheating.
Because you can never think of anything, because there's no joy in your life, because you have a black heart.
And two kids. It's the same thing, but... The American Humanist Association this week, they launched something called the Humanist Legal Society. And for the most part, it's like, what's the big deal? There are atheist lawyers, like FFRF has atheist lawyers, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, if you think about Brett Kavanaugh nominated to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. where did Donald Trump get that name from? He got it because he said the Federalist Society nominated. He said the Federalist Society gave him a list of acceptable judges to them because these are people the Federalist Society has vetted.
Yeah.
They are sufficiently conservative.
So the AHA is doing... Oh, my God.
So the AHA basically is saying we're creating a humanist legal society, which is going to be a network of atheists, humanists, whatever the hell you want to call yourself, lawyers who support, think about this, church-state separation, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, science-based reasoning, like evidence-based reasoning.
Really radical things like that.
Crazy things, which somehow will get taken as... These are far left issues.
Yeah, you know, science, the leftist meme.
Right.
Of science.
And also ethics in government, because they're humanists. They care about ethics.
Yep.
So ethics in government and public and law enforcement, too. So all these, if you are a judge or a lawyer or a law student, they want you to join the society. It's free. You're part of a network.
Do they need a marketing writer?
I'm sure they don't, but whatever. You can ask them. But they launched this society, and they call it a network of legal professionals dedicated to promoting and protecting humanist values.
Yes.
And again, this is not an equivalent to the Federalist Society, because they have money and decades of experience under their belt to the point where they can hand a president a list and say, here, pick these people, and the president
doesn't. This is 40 years in the future, is that... they would have any sway, right?
Optimistic at best. It's a long shot.
Yeah.
All of this stuff is a long shot. But imagine a separate parallel bizarro world where you have a sane person in office.
We took scientists seriously. Yeah. I'd love to live in that
And you
world.
Had a sane person. And they were like, well, I want to consider, you know, appellate judges. I want to consider district court judges. Yeah. Who should I be thinking of? Well, who do they go to? They go to people they trust. They go to... experts in that field who they support, and they say, who do you think? And they get the nomination. Obama had like a giant list of from various groups, I believe, saying like these are qualified people who know what they're doing and they're not interested in legislating their beliefs. They know how to to apply the law.
Right.
And so this is an attempt at saying, like, well, not only are they supporting the issues we specifically care about, but they're also self-described atheists, agnostics, humanists. Right. So good. I'm excited.
Yeah, that's really great.
It sounds like a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
This is something that shouldn't be exclusive to us, as in, like, we shouldn't be the only people happy about it. Anyone can get on board with this in the sense that, oh, yeah, they're supporting values I support, too, even if I'm a religious person.
The same way separate church and state benefits both the church and the state.
So good luck. I hope it goes well, but that's a really neat development. I'm glad they're doing it, and I'm not surprised that David Niosi, who is the HA's legal director, is one of the people behind this, because he's really good at coming up with good ideas for a lot of the activists who work.
That is very, very good news.
So, awesome. There's my happy thing.
Yeah, you got it.
I have nothing else happy to share.
My happy thing, since you didn't ask. Oh, first of all, I finished Nadia's season of the Great British Bake Off last night and, like, cried about it. It just, like, felt really good to have something pure in the world. I loved it so much.
I'll give you one habit. You know what I listen to? Pod Save America. No, I don't listen to it. The Pod Save America guy, Jon Favreau, did The Wilderness.
Is it good?
I listened to all four episodes that they released right at once.
Yeah.
It was really good. Part of it was like hearing clips of the Hopi Changey stuff from 2008, which is like, all right, that time existed. But it's getting to the point where he's like, all right, here's how Democrats need to change for the future.
Yeah.
And here's what Democrats are doing wrong. But, like, we want it to succeed. So here's how we do it. So it was good.
So
I liked it.
If you're not familiar, it's Jon Favreau, who is a former, he's a speechwriter for Obama. And he is on the Crooked Media thing, so he does Pod Save America and things like that. He's a really... I was so slow on the Pod Save America train because I was like, the last thing I need in my media diet is like more white dudes. Yeah. No, more white dude opinions.
Got it.
But it's extremely good. Like, I really, really, really am grateful that it's part of my media diet now. But so he's doing a sort of more docuseries sort of podcast thing, exploring the Democratic Party and what the history and the future and what we've done poorly and what we need to do better. And I will get around to listening to, I need a little bit of a break from, but I mean, I trust Jon Favreau. I think he's
a really bright dude. Episode 4 is the one that was less about all the past Hopi change stuff and getting into here's what we need to do moving forward.
And it also, I think it's a thing that, I don't think it's unique of Democrats, but I also, I mean, I don't have my finger on the pulse of conservative politics. But, like, is there an equivalent to Republicans of, like, what are we doing shitty? How are we losing people?
He only briefly mentioned it, but the closest analog to that, not a podcast, but it was in 2012 when Romney lost, and they're like, God, we lost again to Obama,
where they did that
autopsy report where they said, you know, we need to make sure Latinos feel at home in the Republican Party. We are not doing that right now.
Here's how we can change that.
And what did, but here's the thing, what did Republicans do with that report? That was actually a sensible report. They ignored it completely. And yes, they won now, but who knows? I mean, obviously, who knows what'll happen in the future.
Yeah, but they didn't win.
But the question is,
if
they have the short-term win now and they die as a party as a result, we're going to look back at that autopsy like, you had a chance to change as a party and you failed. This is a chance to kind of say, like, okay, we lost miserably as Democrats.
Right.
So now that we have the opportunity, what can we fix about us that everyone hated so much in 2016?
Right.
And maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think there's a strength to liberals in general in that way of introspection. I mean, like, how many fucking think pieces did we see in late 2016 or early 2017 about, like, what happened? What did Democrats do? How did we lose people?
It's
Who'd
currency
we lose?
For liberals.
It really is. Oh, my God. We love a think piece as a liberal people. And also, I feel like there's some, like, self-awareness of, you know, how many times have I been like, oh, I was peak white liberal person because I drove 20 minutes out of my way to not go to a Hobby Lobby and go to Michael's instead. Like, I think there's a self-awareness that liberals tend to have that I don't see in conservatives of, like, when have you seen a conservative person being like, ugh, I was stereotypical conservative. I brought my gun to the rally and waved an American. Like,
have you been on Twitter?
No, but didn't you hear the sarcasm in my my voice? They don't have sarcasm. No. They don't have irony anymore. They have.
No, that's what people do.
Yeah. Anyway, that got me on a weird rant. Anyway, my happy thing, again, oh, thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
It really means a lot that you want to know about my life.
How was your week?
Actually, you know what? My week was pretty good. I had a doubleheader on Wednesday night.
Did you win?
No, I didn't win either. I reached base a grand total of 0 times. It was a garbage outing for me. My pitch count was high. It was just a mess. But my happy thing is on Thursday, this coming Thursday, as you hear this, if you've listened to it when we put it, I'm sorry, I'm very tired. It's midnight. This is a late recording for us.
Whatevs.
I'm leaving for Pacific Northwest. I'm going to Seattle. I'm going to Squanomi Fall. I don't know, wherever Twin Peaks was filmed.
Oh.
Going to Twin Peaks Fest. I'm very excited about that. I'm medium excited about that. I'm most excited to like hang out in Seattle, going down to Portland, seeing Lee and Amanda, who if you subscribe to or if you're a donor, you've heard them on the Fables podcast.
Oh, fun. Meet them at their home turf.
Yeah, we're going to go. We're staying at their place one night, and then we're going to drive to the coast.
Look at you traveling everywhere.
I know. That's we're going to rent a car and everything, sweet, like adults. We're going to drive to the coast and Cannon Beach, where they filmed Goonies. Have you heard of Goonies?
Heard of it.
Tell me one thing about it.
No.
Okay. Oh, we're going to, like, spend the night on the coast and drive up through wine country. I'm just very, very, very excited to have, like, a cool vacation. We don't get to do this very much, and I'm looking forward to it. Very much.
Have fun. I don't know what we're doing next week. Maybe we'll do an episode. Maybe we'll post an interview. One or the other.
Yeah,
we'll
y'all might not hear from me for 2 weeks, or maybe I'll be here next week. It's hard to say.
Have fun on your trip.
I will have fun on my trip, and I'll let you deal with this.
Yeah, I'll just talk to an empty mic. It's all good. Sneaking into your house, by the way.
If you need, Dottie will be your co-host.
Awesome.
We're just going to leave her here in the house.
You know how to find us. I'm at Hemant Mehta on Twitter.
I'm at Blueberry, BLUEBURIE.
Go to Patreon.com/FriendlyAtheistPodcast.
Yeah. We haven't had listener mail in a few weeks, so if you have any...
Why don't you have questions for us?
Yeah.
What are the existential crises in your life?
We're really wise. I think everything I've said has really lent itself to...
Maybe all the questions have already been answered.
Being somebody who you turn to for advice. Is the answer swearing or yelling about white men? Those are answers I can provide. iTunes, rate, review, subscribe.
We'll be around.
And donate. See you soon. Yeah, okay. All right, bye.
Bye.